Good morning. Good morning and welcome to God Talk. And I guess I probably should say it because this is more or less going to be the, quote, Christmas show, unquote. Merry Christmas. How many times have you said that to people in the last couple of weeks? How many times have people said that to you? My wife and I were walking our dog, who's kind of big, in the Arboretum in Discovery Park yesterday, which is beautiful. It was a beautiful day. We're blessed to have an arboretum in this town. And here was a couple coming toward us. And, of course, they looked at our dog, who's an Anatolian Shepherd, German Shepherd mix, and they got a little nervous probably because he's a big dog. He's only 20 months and 90 pounds. But he's friendly. He loves people. Anyway, so as we got closer, there's always that moment, you know, you look at people, are they going to say hello? Do they want to say hello? Do they want me to just kind of breeze by and ignore them? You sort of pick that up. Anyway, I looked at them and the guy looked at me and I said, hello. And he said, hello. That was it, right? So we kept walking and probably five paces later, I heard Merry Christmas from the guy. And I turned halfway back around and said, and Merry Christmas to you. It was a moment when everything changed. The atmosphere changed. Can you get that? It's like that Merry Christmas, the cheer, it's something real, even though it doesn't last all year. All right, so that's part A. Part B, this is going to be weird, but I had this dream this morning, I'm telling you. You ever have the dream just before you wake up that sometimes is the weirdest? Okay, here's the deal. My mother somehow signed me up to go to a camp, a summer camp. Ever been to a summer camp? Well, my mother, may she rest in peace, raised us, and we were pretty much too poor to go to a summer camp. Well, anyway, I arrived at this camp, and there were, you know, the counselors and the people to check in, and I thought I was going to meet my mother there, who was going to pay for it. But she didn't show up. Well, she's been dead since 1982, okay? In the dream, she was still alive, I guess, but yet she didn't show up. And I'm actually going somewhere with this, all right? And so I had the slow realization, I'm on my own here. Am I going to leave? I decided, no. I'll find a way to pay for it. It would be too embarrassing for me to say, well, my mother's not here, and I guess I can't afford it, and somehow I'm going to have to get back to my home. I decided, and here's the phrase I want to emphasize, to make the best of it. So I reached out to the people there and I began to seek to connect with them, as that's something I've done pretty much all my life, because I've lived in too many places. We've moved around too much as kids and then as adults, my gosh, to make the best of things. And that hits me this Christmas. Whatever your situation, good, bad, or indifferent, we have to make the best of things, right? You know, I'm not just Christian, I'm also Jewish. And let me tell you a story from the Talmudic literature. The Talmud, the Babylonian Talmud, was written roughly between 200 and 400 AD or CE, Common Era. It's millions of words about the mitzvot, the commandments, what it is that we are to do or not to do as Jews in order to please God. So this also filled with stories and theology. Well, here is a fascinating story. Okay. I don't know who brought it up. I don't remember the name of the rabbi. These are the rabbis. But the question was raised, and maybe you've wondered this sometimes in your own life. Would it have been better if God had never created us? And they took that seriously. Have you ever wondered, would it have been better if I'd never been? So, and this is the only time in Jewish history that the rabbis not only discussed it, but they actually voted on it. They made a determination. by vote, which doesn't happen for theology, but only would happen for laws and legislation and what are we to do or not to do in accordance with God's will. Here's the point. They voted, and the majority voted yes. It would have been better if God had never created us. But, and the truth comes after the but. Ever notice that? But, since God made us, we'd better make the best of it. And that was the official position of the rabbis. Yeah, it would have been better if we'd never been, but we are, so therefore, let's make the best of it. And that is my challenge to us all, I suppose, this morning. And that's what I thought about as I reflected in my meditation time, what the meaning of that bizarre dream was. I have made a habit, I haven't always succeeded, of seeking to make the best of whatever circumstances God threw my way. That's our task. I don't know where you are this Christmas. We met with some friends for breakfast Friday, and they were not in a good place because a dear friend of theirs had just died the evening before. And we're at an age where, you know, people are just dying right and left, and this is the season of funerals, it seems like. We tend to undervalue what we have and overvalue what we don't. So I'm going to ask you this Christmas, why don't you reverse it? Maybe not overvalue what you have, but at least see, appreciate the good things that you do have. And let go of some of the things, yeah, you don't have. Or to give you four words, expect less and accept more. Expect less and accept more. My mother raised us, and we were pretty poor most of my childhood. And Christmas was often a time of disappointment, where I didn't get the things as a kid I wanted. But that was okay. We had each other. And it was genuine love. My mother, my fraternal twin brother, and my sister. And then our kids growing up, my wife and I and our three kids. There's always so much to be thankful for. So, make the best of things. That's my beginning. Now, I want to, since this is kind of the Christmas show, The Writers on the Avenue. Ever heard of The Writers on the Avenue? Well, it's a nonprofit literary organization that's dedicated to encouraging the literary arts in and around Muscatine. It was formed in 1989, and I've been a part of it over the years. It's a group of people who just get together monthly to talk about their writing, to share writing, to maybe even get a bunch of words and then take those words and try to make something literary out of them. Anyhow, Misty Urban. Misty is a wonderful woman and a writer who's the president of the organization. And she's organized two books that we've put together. And this one I'm going to read from came out in 2016, and it was Winter Holidays in the City of Pearls. It was about Christmas. And some of you may know, I had a newspaper column here for 13 years. And three of my columns about Christmas one way or another are in this book. So with your permission, I thought, being the Christmas show, I'm going to read these to you and maybe make a comment or two. Because they all involve Christmas and really Muscatine as well. I can't believe that we've been here over 20 years. This is the longest I've lived in one place in my whole life. Wow. This is called Playing Santa. Is there a Santa Claus? Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus, and each of us waiting to come out to do some selfless gift giving. I played Santa Claus at Muscatine's Holiday Stroll. By the way, did any of you go to the Holiday Stroll this year? It was warm, and it was wonderful. I've not been to it in years, but my wife said, let's go, and absolutely, we went with some other people and had a great time. I even had a horse-drawn carriage whisk me around at the end of two wonderful performances of Performing Arts Muscatine. It can be fun to be someone you are not. to have people look at you and see not you, but whomever you are playing. If any of you have ever done theater, and I've done theater, it's interesting to be in character. People are looking at you, but they're seeing the character that you're playing, right? There's nothing quite like the look on young children's faces when they think you are Santa Claus. It makes you want to give them something, to be something for them that brings them joy, hope, and expectation. It makes you want to be Santa Claus, at least for them, at least for the moment. The look on their faces is that of magic and mystery and possibility. The look is that maybe great things can really happen. Desired presents can really be received since Santa's here and they have his attention. Questions may sweep across their minds and guileless faces, of course. You know, like, wait a minute, is this for real? Are you really Santa Claus? Come on. I hope you are. Gosh, it would be great if you were. Please be. But their desire to believe is strong. You remember that as a kid, that desire to believe? Yeah. One little girl, I'll never forget this, she was a doll, climbed up on the carriage and sought my full attention, accompanied by her two older brothers, both of whom had quizzical facial expressions. She asked if she could sit in my lap, like children are supposed to do when Santa Claus is holding court. Looking at her brothers' approving faces, I said, of course. I wondered if her brothers still believed in Santa Claus, but they graciously kept silent about it. Once in my lap, she stared wide-eyed into my Santa's eyes. I smiled and asked her if she'd been a good little girl, and she shook her head yes, fully believing it to be so. I looked at her brothers sitting across from us, and they too shook their heads yes. Then I asked her what she wanted for Christmas. She was ready for me and listed several things. Oh, gee, you know. I said I couldn't promise, but I would do my best to deliver at least some of what she had asked for. I told her to tell her parents what we had talked about and what she had asked Santa to bring her. She smiled and shook her head. Yes, she said she would. Well, I thought the exchange was finished, and I shortly had a show to do, but she had other ideas. She leaned her face even closer to mine and with innocent candor asked me whether I had visited her home last Christmas, whether I had personally delivered her presents. Well, what are you going to say? No, I'm sorry, I'm just one of Santa's helpers. I was ready for her. I said that I hadn't been to her house and that I was only one of Santa's many helpers without whom Santa could not get all the presents delivered. Thankfully, that answer seemed to satisfy her. She and her brothers got off the carriage and returned to the crowded night. And I wished I could be the Santa to bring her presents Christmas Eve, to see her adorable little face when she opened them, to hear her exclaim, "Thanks, Santa." Yeah, Santa's alive and well in each of us, seeking opportunities for gift giving. Let's get the weather report. Okay, we're back. The next story that I wrote for this book, Winter Holidays in the City of Pearls, is called Christmas Eve. So just kind of settle back for the next couple of minutes and remember Christmas Eve and the magic of Christmas Eve. Oh, gosh. I served 10 churches over a 37-year period, so I've had some Christmas Eves. And this is one of those, next week, days where you would have your morning services and then evening services in one day. What a day. Exhausting, but so meaningful. Okay. Christmas Eve. There's something magical about Christmas Eve. Things out of reach for the rest of the year become palpably possible on this day, on this night. Forgiveness, renewal, reconciliation, anticipation of yet to be named good things seem to permeate the air like fragrances, sweet and tantalizing. If you breathe in enough of this rarefied air, your hopes just might get restored. And the heart you may have thought you lost, you just might get back. Isn't it a time for the hearts to soften, I think. Hard-hearted hearts like Scrooge to wake up and be renewed and get what it's all about. If you have not gotten into the Christmas spirit, then Christmas Eve will get to you if anything can. I don't mean by, quote, the Christmas spirit, unquote, the buying, giving, and receiving of gifts. I mean the blessing of being together with loved ones, past and present, of giving and receiving love, of sharing a hidden yet present spirit that bestows meaning, substance, and bearability to life. Reflecting back on past Christmas Eves, and there have been so many, my friends, I remember especially Christmas Eve, and if I get emotional, forgive me, but I always get emotional when I talk about 1973. I was serving two little churches in southeastern Wisconsin. While in seminary, my wife and I had two little children, Matthew, age 3, and Theodore, 6 months. We had a beautiful Christmas Eve candlelight communion service. It was cold and glowing snow blanketed the ground. We put Theodore wearing his Dr. Denton pajamas in a wicker laundry basket and carried him as if wrapped in swaddling clothes to church. He had just fallen asleep and immersively slept through the service because he could cry like the best of them. Though I was new at the ministry business, the service and singing went well. Joy and anticipation radiated everywhere. Life was making great sense. Then we packed our little Chevy Vega wagon. Oh boy, that's another story, that car. And headed for Des Moines to spend Christmas with my wife's family. It was after 10 when we pulled out of our driveway and headed west. The moon and the stars were out and the air was crisp and quiet. Though we talked animatedly about our lives, Theodore slept on and Matthew soon joined him. I wish I had checked the weather report because an hour into our travel, snow began to fall. It came down harder and harder, at times blizzard-like. Since I could still make out the road and its helpful markers, I kept on driving, though slowly and prayerfully. What should have been a 6-hour leisurely trip ended up a 10-hour ordeal. Driving all night, we arrived in Des Moines, greeted by a bright dawning sun, which reflected with a nearly blinding radiance off the fresh snow. It was as beautiful a Christmas morning as I've ever seen. As we pulled into the driveway of my wife's parents, I said a prayer of thanks. Then Matthew and Theodore awoke, almost as if on cue. The dark night of anticipation, though difficult, had ended. Now began the wakeful warmth of Christmas, the sounds, the sights, the smells, the laughs, the hugs, the gifts, the gags, the food, the drinks, the toasts, and the family above all, the family. The best thing about Christmas Eve is that Christmas Day is coming. And staying awake all night, driving through a snowstorm in order to greet its cold yet radiant stillness makes it all the sweeter. I will never forget that. Christmas Eve, what was your most memorable Christmas Eve? Or maybe you've had several. It's coming. A week from today will be Christmas Eve. I hope you will make the best of what you have and give thanks for the good that has come your way, whatever else may be the case with you, because Christmas is good for many, but so tough for so many others. Wow. Well, there's a third essay from this book, Winter Holidays in the City of Pearls, and it's called, appropriately, Christmas Reflections. Christmas season is the friendliest time of the year. People try a little harder to reach out, to be humane, to show their best side. There is more energy in the air, the energy of anticipation. We prepare for family gatherings, for giving and receiving. We think of doing for others. This is great in itself, regardless of the season's religious significance. With the preparation, there's a renewal and hope. Another Christmas gives us a chance to do it all over again. Maybe this Christmas can be better than the last one. Maybe this time we can get it right. Our gift can be better thought out. We can be more appreciative receivers. We can do more for others, especially for strangers. Maybe this year we can end up feeling better about ourselves and more satisfied with our lot. There are people who don't reach out during this season. For some, it is a particularly difficult time. It may remind them more of what they don't have than of what they do. It may brook nostalgia toward Christmas's past and sorrow toward Christmas present. The distant warmth of yesteryear facing the bleakness of today. Such persons need a season of friendliness. They need to be befriended, comforted, and they need to befriend others because doing something for another can ease their burden and brighten their day and their way of being. Being friendly puts a song in the heart. Try it, you'll find out. There's no better antidote, even if it's temporary, to depression, my friends, than doing something for another. It is, of course, difficult to be friendly on demand. We may smile on demand, but our hearts are more difficult to persuade, to feel, let alone show goodwill and good cheer. You can suggest, even plead with your heart, but demands don't sit well with or on the heart. This season does make demands on us. We're supposed to show ourselves to be good folk, to be in the spirit of things, whatever that may mean in our situation. As I just said at the beginning of the show, you know, that passing by of strangers at the Arboretum yesterday, that Merry Christmas may have been forced, but it changed everything. If you don't feel particularly friendly this season, but you want to get into friendliness, okay, here's a route that works, certainly for me. Act it, even if you don't feel it. Pretend it has its place, as long as it remains brief and helps you to turn your engine over, so it ceases to be pretend. You'll actually cease pretending once others reward you and reinforce your friendliness. So if someone asked John Wesley, the founder of the People Called Methodists, what to do, and they're just beginning to preach, and they were afraid, and he said, preach faith until you have it, and then preach faith. Stop thinking about yourself and start thinking about others. Let others think about you. What might their needs be? What might you do to cheer their hearts, to enhance their lives, to move them toward friendliness? Instead of focusing on the reasons to be down, focus on reasons to be up. I'm reading a book right now, by the way, by Father Richard Rohr called Falling Upward. We have those times of downers, but you know, sometimes the best thing that can happen to us is to have our life broken so we can be remade in a better way, to have our images shattered so that God can get through. The Navajo rugs that are made so well, there's always an imperfection in them on purpose an imperfection, and the Navajos call that the spirit hole. That's where the Spirit of God can get through. No matter how far down you may be, you still have reasons to be thankful. Even if you cannot get yourself up, practice giving thanks anyway. Keep it up until your burdens shift, if not lift. And then share something that gives you joy with another, whether it's how good the cold air feels on your face, or the fun of watching children being children. Share it with another. You might make their day. You might pass your friendliness on to others. And then do something good for someone every day. Something. Make every day count. That's one of my themes now. Make every day count. This is a simple secret of happiness, and make it a lifelong habit. And do something good for you every day. Do something good for you. Be your best friend. Be the gift to yourself that no one else can be. Well, as we're coming to an end, let me say, I'm going to put this show on my website if you would like to hear it. I will have it on later today, and the website is drhalgreen.com, drhalgreen.com. Merry Christmas. God bless you, and God bless us all.